Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're revealing how we invest our money.
Not only are we talking about, Joel, how you and I, how we invest our money, we're going to talk about how it is that you, our listener, how you should probably be investing, what it is that your money should be in. It's not Beanie Babies. Instead, it's a Big Mac GIF.
Yeah, that's a good idea for most people too. Anything like virtual hamburger, I'm in, like I'll invest my money there. So.
Yes. And of course, we are completely joking. We're going to mostly be talking about just asset allocation and what specifically your money should be in. And we're going to get to that during this episode, buddy.
Yeah. A lot of things to consider when you're thinking about how you invest your money. And I know for a lot of people, there's a mental hurdle that needs to be overcome when you're thinking about, you know, what funds you put your money in. We get a lot of questions about that from people, Matt. And so, yeah, today on the show, we're going to do our best to kind of give a holistic view of what it looks like to be well diversified. And at the same time, we're going to give specifics on how we're invested. Yeah. So hopefully that can be helpful too.
Heck yes.
But before we get to that, Matt, I wanted to let you know that, so I was on a neighborhood phone call the other night, a Zoom call, and you know, there's all sorts of stuff going down in the neighborhood. People wanting to,
was it a neighborhood planning unit meeting?
Yes, it was. Meeting? It was. And those are a lot of, they're interesting at times, but my wife and I are planning on, we're adding a bathroom on the back of our house.
That's like, right.
Because we have, essentially we bought a duplex. We rented out the back of it for over four years, but now we have more kids and we're kind of taking over the whole space and we need an additional bathroom. So this bathroom screen porch combo is going in soon and we had to get some plans approved, but less about that. I wanted to talk actually about something else that I learned in the NPU meeting, and this was that apparently if you shop at Kroger, they have this thing called Kroger Community Rewards, and I had no idea that this existed. You know, you and I were kind of Costco Aldi people. I go to Kroger sometimes though, because it's convenient.
Very rarely. Yeah, like I don't want to go to Kroger, but
yeah.
I will.
Yeah, but if and when you do go to Kroger, if you sign up for their Kroger Community Rewards, you can actually earn money for local nonprofits or national nonprofits, and so that was cool. I didn't know that. You know, anytime I spend money at Kroger, my local neighborhood organization can actually reap some of the benefits. So, yeah,
which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Specifically, somebody was presenting that because they're like, hey, make sure that you put the East Atlanta Foundation as your nonprofit. That's us. Yeah. We want to make sure that we're getting the funding from that.
Right.
Which makes a lot of sense. I, too, had never heard of this. You mentioned it to me. I was like, wait, what? Never heard of this. And that's probably what it's going to take to get me to go to Kroger and spend my money. not at Aldi, because Aldi doesn't have anything like that. Do you know if actually if you can apply dollars from your gas? Because we often get gas there at Kroger.
Oh, that's a good question. I'm guessing anytime you use your Kroger rewards card or whatever, that they're like, you know, racking up your purchases and they're donating some of that money to community organizations. If you sign up, that's a trick though. Like, it doesn't cost you anything except for like a minute of your time. And then anytime you shop there in the future, your organization that you've chosen is going to, you know, get some dollars, which is cool. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes. It was something, again, I had no idea about, but super cool. And I'm glad that anytime I do spend money there now, it's going to help out the neighborhood.
Yeah, that's right, man. But let's go ahead now, introduce the beer that you and I are going to enjoy on this episode. Like all episodes, we always enjoy a craft beer because it's something that you and I, we enjoy now. We want to make sure that we are living life, you know, so to speak, in the here and now, while at the same time saving for our futures as well. We're not like total money nerds where we're only depriving ourselves.
Well, we're total money nerds, but we're not like, we don't deprive ourselves to the extreme.
Exactly.
And I think, yeah, for us, enjoying life is enjoying craft beer together.
Yeah. And that's a part of how this show came about, right? You and I, we enjoy sharing beers together, talking about money. And now we just do the same thing, but we record it. But this episode, you and I are enjoying Haptic, which is an American IPA. And this is from our friends over at Halfway Crooks, one of our favorite local breweries here in Atlanta, and we will share our thoughts on this beer at the end of the episode.
That's right, we will. But all right, Matt, on to the subject at hand. Today on the show, we are going to reveal how we invest our money, and it's going to get...
There's going to be such a letdown.
It's like, oh, the way they invest is really boring.
It's I thought they were going to be all in on gold, you know, like gold bullion.
Yeah, well, sorry if we let you down on that, but that's not going to be the case, but we will get to that later on in the episode. But we are also going to talk about asset allocation and diversification. And Matt, there's this saying that all of us have heard, right? Don't put all your eggs in one basket.
I've heard it.
Pretty sure my parents told me that at one point growing up, maybe when I was like picking a job and I was like, no, pressure washing, I'm going to be good at this. And they were like, no, you should diversify.
No, son.
Your skills.
I actually remember Kate saying that to me when we actually had chickens. She's like, she was like, what's the, like, why do they say that? Make sure you just do the right thing when you go get it.
Should I get a few baskets when you go to get those eggs? Yeah.
I was just like, well, I'll be careful.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know where it came from. So I looked it up and it turns out it comes from the 17th century. And it became a thing when you were grabbing eggs from your hens, because if you had all of your eggs in one basket and you dropped it, you got a bunch of busted up eggs.
Makes sense.
No breakfast the next day, sadly.
Or probably for like a few days, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
No breakfast for the village.
Right. But if you were smart and maybe used a few different baskets instead of overcrowding the one, you could drop one and still have eggs for breakfast that week.
There you go.
Maybe just one fewer, right? Each day. And I think we can all get overwhelmed in an attempt to diversify our investments and come up with the perfect asset allocation. There's so many articles and so much out there on the internet about creating the perfect asset allocation. And it can be overwhelming to people, just everyday people who have jobs and families, to figure this stuff out. And so, yeah, on this episode, we wanted to spend some time thinking about asset allocation and simplicity at the same time, and the advantages to having a more simple asset allocation. Less can truly be more in so many cases. And so we're going to talk about that and then describe exactly how you and I invest later on.
That's right. And, you know, we hear from listeners as well who frequently just don't know what to invest in. You know, they hear us talk about like IRAs and 401ks, they learn how to open one of those up. It's pretty easy. But then they get overwhelmed about where to actually invest, you know, their money within those vehicles. And then other listeners too have expressed maybe being nervous that they aren't diversified enough in their holdings. So we want to kind of do a deep dive on asset allocation today, and hopefully too to put your mind at ease, to help you to think through like what a sound diversification strategy looks like. And we're primarily going to focus on securities like stocks and bonds, not the countless other ways that present themselves as quote unquote investments. You know, yep. We want to avoid the Beanie Babies. We want to avoid the Burger King pins.
As kind of a money nerd, that is one of the things that annoys me from time to time, and I've tried to let it annoy me less over the years, when someone's like, you know, you should buy that. That's a good investment. And usually what they're referring to is some consumable item that won't be around much longer. And they're like, hey, that's a good investment if you get that television. And I'm like, no, buying a television, not an investment. So we're not going to be talking about...
It will only depreciate in value.
Yeah, exactly. It's fine to purchase that TV, right? If that's, you know, if you can afford it and that's what you want for your family, but it's not an investment. So calling it that, just, you know, it's one of my pet peeves.
That's true. And at one point, I feel like I ventured to even call a bike an investment because I like bikes so much. And you're like, dude, we can't call bikes an investment. It doesn't make you money. But, you know, it's a tool that allows you to live a potentially more frugal and fulfilling lifestyle.
That's true.
But does it go up in value? Nope.
No, not usually.
Not likely.
Maybe if you own it for like 50 years and it becomes vintage, potentially then.
Maybe then.
Yeah, but no wonder people doubt themselves, right, Matt? When it comes to kind of those decisions about where they put their money when they're investing it, I feel like there's a constant push for new ways to invest, new sectors that are opening up that people are told that they should be putting their money into. Do I need to invest in crowdfunding real estate sites, gold, crypto, and NFTs? Like, that's a lot of different places to put your money.
Or nifties.
Nifties.
That's what the kids are calling it these days.
Well, they're cooler than I am. But that can feel overwhelming to people, right? Like, and I think the pitch is always that investing in each of these areas adds diversification.
Right.
And so diversification is always good. And so we got to own some of those things. But the truth is, I think you can go bonkers trying to be perfectly diversified, especially in an investing climate like we're dealing with now, one of like seemingly endless possibilities, which I think will drive you insane because there's a new investment class every week, it feels like. And so, yeah, being diversified in a simple way is what you and I are after. One that like any of us can actually replicate.
That's true. And you know, the thing is, diversification wouldn't even be necessary if we knew the future, right? Like if we only knew the particular companies, the stocks and the sectors that will have success in the coming months and years, diversification would become a pretty stupid idea, right? And when you look at what the market has done over the past 10 years, certain sectors like tech have outperformed others. And, you know, as Tesla became a stock that people obsessed over, it shot through the roof. Risky bets like Bitcoin have paid off handsomely too. It's easy to get caught up in the exuberance and just say, screw it, you know, I'm going to pick winners, as opposed to diversifying your holdings. But you don't have to look too far back in history to see the disastrous effects. In the mid to late 90s, the NASDAQ was crushing it as, you know, tech stocks were red hot, but the early 2000s saw similarly dramatic losses. And so a lack of diversification might work out in the short term, but there's a reason that it's a crucial pillar of smart investors.
Truth. Yeah. And so let's talk about maybe the traditional view of what makes up or made up a balanced and diversified portfolio. The 60-40 portfolio has kind of been the simple standard that a lot of fund managers and just a lot of individuals have held to. And that's basically having 60% of your money invested in stocks and the other 40% invested in bonds. And there's nothing wrong with that approach, right? In fact, I think it's still a great choice for a lot of investors, especially folks who are nearing retirement age, right? You certainly don't want to be all in on stocks when you're in your 70s, right? But for many folks in the wealth building phase of life like us, Matt, and like a lot of our listeners, it's not a great choice. And so we would say that you need even more stock exposure. And actually, there have been a lot of stories too written about how maybe a 60-40, even for folks approaching retirement age, is a little too conservative in today's environment.
Yeah, that's true. And the reason for this is due to bonds, you know, lackluster performance, right? Since 1926, large stocks have returned an average of 10% per year, whereas bonds have returned between 5 and 6% over that same period. And so, you know, investing in stocks is riskier, but they provide better rewards. Bonds, on the other hand, smooth out the ride. And so if you are risk averse, you know, holding bonds can kind of help you keep investing well, even when volatility hits, because the long term doesn't really matter if you can't handle the fluctuations that you might experience in the short term.
Yeah, Matt, that makes me think of like, someone going to college and it's like, you know what? You can graduate a whole lot quicker if you take a 25-hour course load every semester. That's true, but that's going to burn you out. Like, you're going to drop out. You're not going to get the degree. And so, you know, it's better just to like stay the course with that like 15, 16, 17 hour workload.
There you go.
Instead, right? And we're going to talk more about risk and stocks in just a little bit. But that higher rate of return with stocks is why most young listeners will likely need to be primarily invested in stocks and not in bonds. And that being said, there are a number of things to keep in mind when it comes to asset allocation. We're going to get to some of those things right after this break.
All right, we are back. And, you know, before the break, we were talking about one of the differences between stocks and bonds. And so let's continue that conversation because, you know, it is not only about higher performance that you're likely to, you know, going to see with stocks that you need to consider. That's not the only thing that you need to think through. There are other things that you might want to keep in mind. There are a couple of questions that you need to ask yourself when determining how you should be investing. The answers to these questions can help guide your diversification strategy, and that's what we're going to talk about now.
Let's do it. All right, first question up that you need to ask yourself when you're trying to figure out what your diversification strategy should look like is, what's your appetite for risk? And so, like, depending on your age, your income, et cetera, you might have a different risk appetite even than your peers or than your best friend, right?
Like, yeah.
Matt is, you know, super into Bitcoin and I'm not. And so, like, you know, we're just different in that way, right?
Well, actually, we'll talk about Bitcoin a little bit later on. I'm not super into it. but I mean, it does kind of come down to like your personality and kind of what you've lived through. Like, as an entrepreneur, I feel like I'm realizing that I am way more risk positive. Like, I'm okay to expose myself to risk. And I feel like that, you know, having not had a steady paycheck for the past 13 years, having not had benefits, health insurance, a 401k, like all these things, I'm like, oh, like a lot of people really want those things. It's not something I've ever had. So because of that, I'm realizing that when it comes to, you know, making certain investments, I am okay, I guess, being more exposed to that risk.
Yeah, and part of the reason they want it is because it feels steadier and less risky, right?
Sure.
It's not necessarily because they want to work for someone else. It's because the thought of working for themselves is a little too scary. And I understand that, right? So yeah, so much of it does come to personality and,
right.
You know, what's happened in your life. Also too, like living through real life scenarios really helps the most in folks determining what sort of risk they are willing to endure, right? And we had a perfect ability to see kind of how we react this past March. It was obviously a short-lived drop, but how did you react, right? Did you make changes to your investments or did you come close to it? Were you like about to pull the trigger and then the market started to rebound?
Well, what's important too is like think about like maybe the kinds of changes that you're going to make, right? Because like if when the market was tanking, you were thinking about pulling money out, well, that's a problem.
Right. And like going into cash.
Yeah. That tells me you are risk averse. Like that is something you're trying to avoid. You're basically trying to save yourself even more pain.
Right.
Versus if the changes you're looking to make were if you're willing to jump into the market at that point, well, it's like, well, you knew that there's a chance it could keep tanking. Like you were jumping into a very volatile market and things may or may not pan out. Who knows?
Right.
But like that tells me that you probably are, you know, more comfortable with, you know, exposing yourself to that risk. And so it's not about the changes, but actually what types of changes that you're looking to make as well.
Yeah, and I think too, if you can't handle a 30% decline in your portfolio balance, then you should reconsider your portfolio allocation, right? Your goals and life situation might necessitate that right. for you. And that's because something akin to a 10, 20, or 30% drop, you're going to see a whole lot more of those over your investing lifetime, especially if you're a young investor and all you've known is, you know, mostly the bull market we've had for the last 11 years or whatever.
Seriously. Yeah.
You know, that was a nice scenario to experience, at least for a second, to see how you hold up to volatility. But yeah, how were you reacting emotionally? And if it didn't really faze you, then your risk appetite is strong and you can afford to let your asset allocation reflect that.
Yeah. And hopefully we won't see drawdowns of 30%. You know, in the future moving forward. But like, gosh, man, like with the housing crisis back in, you know, 07, 08, the pandemic, all these have happened like pretty close together. And so maybe this is something that we're going to see more often as, you know, our world becomes more connected. Who knows? Like, I guess that's all I'm saying. We don't know, but we want you to be prepared for the idea that like 10% drawdowns or like even 20%, maybe even 30% like that. It might be more common. It might happen a little more frequently. And, you know, like you kind of touched on this, Joel, but regardless of whether or not you can handle the risk, your goals and your life situation might call for you to make some changes to how you invest. So, for example, if you're nearing retirement, even though you might be all about risk, you probably need to dial it back some on the stocks so that you don't lose meaningful chunks of the wealth that you've built up because of that volatility as you get closer to retirement. But on the other hand, say you're in your 20s, right? Maybe you're just starting to invest in your 401k. Maybe you finally set up a Roth. It's important to note that you likely have many decades of growth ahead of you. There's plenty of time to kind of smooth out a bumpy stock market. And in that case, you could skip bonds altogether. And even if you might be a bit risk averse, this would be an instance where you need to force yourself into more risk exposure. This is an instance where you need to push yourself to get more into stocks and kind of shy away from those bonds.
Yeah, you might be like, I was born this way. I'm like not a risky person. But at the same time, like to be able to retire someday.
Yeah, well, you're going to be broke otherwise.
Yeah, you have to take some risks. And like we've talked about actually before on the show, one of the biggest risks is inflation, eating away your money. Yeah. And so to not take any risk means you're taking the ultimate risk, which is the known risk of inflation just like wiping you out and really, really killing your ability to save for the future.
That's right.
And it's also, too, it's important to ask yourself what your goals are. If you're looking to beat the market, well, you're going to need to be even more aggressive when determining which funds you invest in. And it's not that some people haven't been able to beat the market over an extended period of time. I mean, look at people like Warren Buffett or Peter Lynch, who, in the 80s for Fidelity. It's just that most people can't. And it's especially difficult when you have a day job and a family and responsibilities, right? When it's not your full-time job. So we just don't think it's generally a great goal for most armchair investors who have generally busy lives.
Yeah.
But if that is your goal, your diversification strategy is going to have to look different than what Matt and I are outlining here, because that's not what we're trying to do.
That's right. And so, no matter what your goals are or, what your appetite for risk is, having a plan really comes in clutch here. It helps to kind of take that emotion out of the equation. And it can also curb, the FOMO, the fear of missing out that we talked about earlier on in the year, as meme stocks were fluctuating like crazy. And so creating a written investment plan of your very own will be invaluable as you are confronted with new investment opportunities and as you are tempted by, the different headlines that you see. It's not that like you can't or that you won't ever revise your plan over time, but this personalized investment plan, it acts as sort of like headlights, for the road ahead, helping you to kind of maintain your course. It's almost like a budget. It makes me think of a budget, right? Like with a budget, you are proactively deciding where it is that you're going to spend your money. In the same way, a written investment plan, you are just basically deciding how and when it is that you're going to invest your money. It's essentially kind of you like getting ahead of your emotions a little bit. It's you saying that like, I steer this ship. Yeah. I'm not going to let the headlines, I'm not going to let my emotions be the thing that directs where my money goes and how it is that I'm going to invest.
All right. It makes me think. So, the headlights on my car, they're kind of foggy. So
are they?
I need to get one of those like headlight repair kits or I think you can actually they're DIY
good for like
it, right?
Yeah. They're good for like a year.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe 2 years. I did it a couple of times with our old Volkswagen, but man, it definitely feels good for like a few months after that. I'm just like, oh my gosh, just like I've got a brand new car.
Yeah. Your investment plan can last longer than that, but just maybe that up in my mind when you gave that analogy. But I think too, yeah, that investment plan can be as simple as writing out something like this. Okay, since I'm 25 with a super long time horizon, before I need this money, I'm going to be 100% invested in stocks. every month.
Sounds good.
I'm going to set aside $500 so that when the new year comes around, I can make a max contribution to my Roth IRA.
Lump sum investing, all about it.
Exactly. And then it's going to be in low cost index funds. It can be that basic. Like, it doesn't have to even go beyond that. It doesn't need to be, you know, multi-pages. And actually, if it's multi-page, you're probably doing it wrong.
Totally. I completely agree with that. I mean, I think having like a little summary, like a little snapshot of something that you can refer back to when you are kind of like, what are we doing? Like, should we be maybe taking advantage of some of these other things that we're seeing? Like, it's like, so, you know, Joe Blow down the street, he invested in, you know, Tesla last year. And, you know, I don't even know what it increased. We've talked about it before, but like, it blew up last year.
Yeah.
But you never know what a single stock is going to do.
And now they bought a private island and I'm like over here, just like still schlepping away at my job.
It's true. But, you know, even still, if you're looking for maybe a touch more guidance, you know, in the example you gave, like we're talking about going 100% in stocks. But another consideration is you can maybe hit the diversification easy button. And in that case, target date retirement funds are your best bets. And I think they make sense for a whole lot of people, especially folks who want to think about asset allocation as little as possible, right? I mean, I feel like they're very similar as like a crock pot. You know, you just set it, you forget it, you don't have to revisit the thing. No need to use a whole lot of brain power here. That's pretty nice. Except that, like a crock pot.
That's really nice, especially when you have as little as I have to spare. So.
That's true. But like, here's the thing, like a crock pot doesn't like revisit what you got in the pot and look at it. And it's just like, oh, you need to add some more seasoning here. Like, that's what target date funds do. Like, they actively look at what's going on and automatically rebalance. And that's part of what makes target date funds so amazing. It's even better than a crock pot, really. You know, it's like having a personal chef. It's like a personal robot chef mixed together with a crock pot.
There you go. Well, and the nice thing too about target date funds is that they're almost all super low cost. So you don't have to worry about, like, oftentimes if you're picking other individual funds that aren't index funds, the fees, the expense ratios on those funds can really add up. But target date funds are, you know, because there's so much money invested in those funds and they are kind of set it and forget it, they're a lot cheaper and you know, they're not going to be a drag on your earnings, which is nice. But target date funds are potentially not risky enough for younger investors. And it's important to mention that too. That's why Matt and I were fans of people in the wealth building phase of their life being 100% invested in stocks. If you have that risk appetite we were talking about earlier, if you can stay the course when the market is experiencing lots of volatility. Also, too, I just mentioned, you know, target date funds have low expense ratios. Well, it turns out that those total market funds are the cheapest funds around. They're even cheaper than those target date funds. So, like Vanguard's VU or VTSAX are worthwhile options.
VTSAX.
Yeah, you like your...
That's how people say it.
Yeah, okay.
It's just fun to say, VTSAX.
I'm just not cool, man. So, and then, like, Fidelity's, I don't know if I'm saying this one, Matt. Tell me, FZ Rocks.
I think they intentionally chose an acronym that was also fun to say because, like, they're literally going, you know, toe-to-toe with VTSAX.
It's got to be
so
cool.
So they're like, okay, how else can we top? Sacks. They're like, oh, I guess that's not that hard, actually. Instead, we could just say rocks.
Because sacks makes you think Kenny G and, you know, depending on like where you live.
Roses and romance.
Yeah. It's either cool or not, depending on, you know, the age bracket you're in, I guess. But
yeah. Oh, something else, too. I mean, if you do want to go with like a target date fund, I think even choosing a retirement date that's maybe 5 or 10 years beyond when you actually are looking to retire, that's a way to kind of get the benefits of that automatic rebalancing while also skewing slightly towards having something that's a little bit more aggressive.
Yeah, true. But we'll put links to some of these funds that we're talking about in the show notes, including some of our favorite target date funds too. But it's important if you're kind of beginning your investing journey, I think that considering one of the total stock market funds as a place to put most or all of your investment dollars is well worth you considering.
That's right. And so, you know, this also kind of brings up another popular question that we get, which is, you know, folks don't know much about diversification. They kind of just assume that they need to pick a few different funds to invest in.
Like one fund, not enough.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, isn't having all my money in one fund sort of like putting all my eggs in one basket, you know, back in 1700s Holland? And that is a good question. But, you know, one fund isn't necessarily diversified enough. But it can be if you choose the right one. And so, yeah, Joel, you know, you and I, we do believe that just going with one target date fund or going with one total stock market fund can provide you with the proper amount of diversification that you need.
And there are some people that feel differently and they would disagree with us.
That's true.
And that's okay. I would be willing to talk to any of them any day. It's fine. Like, it's okay that we might differ on that. But, you know, Matt and I feel like we're also in pretty good company here when we say this, when we say that choosing just one of those funds is an okay way, is a good route for people to consider. A lot of experts, like, you know, good pal, friend of the show, Warren Buffett.
That's right.
he's been on many times. Sadly, no. Maybe one of these days. Jack Bogle,
that'd be amazing, actually.
That would be cool. The founder of Vanguard, you know, he's with us on that.
Yeah. And then, yeah, exactly. If you disagree with us, you're disagreeing with Jack Bogle.
Yeah, and Warren Buffett, and J.L. Collins, who actually has been on the show.
Yeah.
And those guys stress investing exactly along the lines that we're describing. And in fact, Matt, Warren Buffett has been quoted actually in 2014. He said that once he dies, he wants 90% of his money in a low-cost S&P 500 index fund. He said preferably Vanguard's, although I will say FC Rocks was not in existence at that time. But yeah. I think he would say either's great.
He'd be down with that.
Yeah, but the other 10% he said to put in short-term government bonds. And I guess, Matt, I think if it's diversified enough for those fellas, it's diversified enough for what we're trying to achieve and what our listeners should be trying to achieve. They don't necessarily need to go beyond those bounds in order to have a diversified portfolio and feel comfortable about it.
Yeah, that's right. And that quote was specifically applying to the money that would be left for his wife. Because, you know, he's like, if I die, no one's here to manage money. He's like, it doesn't really need to be managed. Just make sure it is in, you know, the S&P 500 fund. Make sure it's invested well. And she's going to be totally fine.
She'll be well taken care of.
She'll be set.
Yeah.
and so, of course, too, you know, the reason that these index funds are enough diversification, like in and of themselves, is because each fund is made up of hundreds or even thousands of individual stocks. If you're invested in an S&P 500 fund, you've got around 500 different stocks in that one index fund. That's why it's called the S&P 500. If you own a total stock market fund like VT Sachs, then you own around 3,500 different stocks. So, like going back to the eggs in a basket analogy, like forget having all your eggs in one basket. How about like a few thousand baskets?
Yeah, because sounds nice.
That's essentially what's going on here.
They're gonna be tiny eggs, but still.
they're robin eggs. And so in this way, it's obviously that's not possible in real life, right? Because you can't take 10 eggs and diversify them over, you know, 3,500 different baskets. But with investing, you can. And that's one of the amazing things about index funds. It's why we're huge fans of them. And we're kind of getting a little ahead of ourselves as to how it is that we invest.
Oh.
But, you know, not surprisingly, we're big fans of index funds, for
all
sure.
Right. Well, let's get there. Let's talk about how we invest. And, you know, Matt, we're going to get into Bitcoin, actually, because you've made a recent play there. And we'll talk about that a little bit, too. But, yeah, how we invest our money. We'll get to some specifics and we'll reveal that stuff, right? Right after this break. All right, we're back from the break. Now we're actually going to reveal how we invest our money. And Matt, you recently made a play into Bitcoin, so I want to talk about that. But as part of a small diversification strategy, it's important to note that we are okay with people taking a couple of moonshot chances. Like that's like the hip term these days, right? Like
moonshot.
Yeah.
Diamond hands, baby.
Right. But it's important for us and we think for you guys to keep those shots to 5% or less of your overall portfolio. I think you can think of it as like a pressure relief valve. You were talking about crock pots earlier on your Instant Pot, right? Like you got to put that thing out so you can like actually...
Oh, whoa. Crock pots way different than Instant Pots for sure. similar.
Crock pot doesn't have the release valve, but the Instant Pot does.
Yeah, Instant Pots are way more efficient.
That's true.
Like we actually don't even have a crock pot in our house. But Kate, however, loves the Instant Pot. We use it all the stinking time.
The Instant Pots are great.
Literally used it yesterday to make some grits. If you've never used grits with a nonstick insert on the Instant Pot... You can knock out grits in like 5 minutes, man. It's so good.
Our northern listeners are like, what are grits?
I mean, it's milled corn, but don't get it confused with cream of wheat because it's very different.
It's a very southern thing too. Yeah. So, all right, but yeah, this small percentage of your portfolio that you're able to take some extra risk with really acts as this pressure relief valve so that you don't get too much FOMO when you are reading those headlines. Having a small bit of play money can really help you stay the course for the long term in the more boring index funds that we're fans of with the vast majority of your portfolio. Just having that small amount to mess with can help your brain continue to do the boring thing with the vast majority.
Yeah, it keeps you from exploding your investments, right. Exploding your portfolio. But yeah, that's exactly what I did with Bitcoin earlier this year. I feel it's a technology that continues to kind of show a lot of promise. And so I jumped in. actually, I didn't like jump in per se. It's more like kind of dipping a toe in the waters of cryptocurrency. But, you know, like I've got very little interest in the latest like hot stocks of the day, you know, the different meme stocks like we're talking about, like GameStop or AMC. But I have felt a sense of FOMO for not owning any crypto. And so just like we've always said on the show, you know, if you want to have, you know, 5% of your portfolio and do some more speculative purchases, go for it. And so in our case, you know, I placed a very small percentage of my overall portfolio. It's actually less than 5%.
So you only own 15 Bitcoins is what you're saying.
Yeah, please. I put less than 5%, you know, way fewer. Dude, I think it's like 0.01%. Seriously, it's like it's like 0.015 I don't even know. It's such a small percentage of actual Bitcoin that I own. But it's a dollar amount, though, that wouldn't crush me if it were to tank, you know, and like even if it completely evaporates and go to zero, sure, it would totally suck, but I'm going to be okay with that. And so, you know, just like with my retirement accounts, I'm in it for the long haul. But even still, you know, that being said, at the time of recording this, it is up 16%. And so it's nice. It's nice to kind of feel like you're kind of jumping in on that a little bit. Like in that same way, I felt good once Tesla joined the S&P 500, because that was one of those things where I'm just like, dang it, I feel like I'm kind of missing out a little bit. I don't do single stock investing, but then they kind of got inducted into the S&P 500.
Now you own a little bit.
And I was I was happy. I was like, sweet. I think like 2% of the S&P 500 is made up of Tesla, which made me very happy. I'm like, perfect. That's exactly maybe what I would have done anyway, like a very small percentage outside of actual index funds in a single stock like that. And so that checked the box for me.
There you go. And so that's like how you're doing some play money with Bitcoin.
Yeah.
But you don't really
have a very small amount.
Anything else that you've done play money with.
Like no.
Bitcoin's like the first thing, right?
Yeah.
And like I personally have not really felt the need to pursue any sort of pressure relief valve strategy yet. Although I could see myself doing a bit of that potentially in the future. But for the time being, all of our family's retirement assets are in 401ks and Roth IRAs, and they're with Vanguard and Fidelity. Except for my wife has this small 401k with a previous employer, but fortunately the costs are super low there, so we've kept that where it is. But inside of those accounts, we are almost exclusively invested in VT Sachs and FZ Rocks, which are the two funds that we mentioned earlier. I do have a small amount of our retirement assets in a small cap fund with Vanguard 2. The great thing is that with our portfolio set up this way, we barely have to think about it. We keep on investing month after month, automatically buying more shares of each of these funds. But that's actually my favorite part of this strategy, is that really none of your mental bandwidth has to go to thinking about it. It just kind of like is set on autopilot. Also, too, we hold a fair amount of cash on hand. And, you know, I think that's actually part of my diversification strategy, is to have more cash than even 6 months of an emergency fund. And that's not actually so we can take advantage of market dips. I know some people like to play that game. I don't play that game either. I just dollar cost average every single month. I put money in the market every single month like clockwork. But it is so that I can cobble together the down payment on a property, a rental property, if the right one comes along. That's kind of why I like to keep extra cash in the bank account, because you never know when a sweet local real estate deal is going to pop up and I'm going to want to pounce.
That's right. Yeah, folks have heard us talk about real estate investing over the years. And obviously, you know, that's outside of the scope of what we're talking about today, but it is important to mention. Owning a few properties locally where we live, it's a helpful diversification strategy overall. Plus, it's something that you and I, you know, we really enjoy, and it does provide a nice monthly cash flow as well. And so that was how Joel invests his money. Now we're going to get to my big reveal. You know, outside of the very small amount of money I have in Bitcoin, I have 100% of my retirement invested in one single fund, which is VOO, V-O-O. That's actually the one that Warren Buffett told, you know, whoever to put money in to for his wife, like after he were to pass. So that's Vanguard's S&P 500 ETF. So it's super diversified. It has an expense ratio of like 0.03%. And again, that's 0.03%. It's not 3%. It's 0.03%, so it's virtually free, and I'm planning to continue that for a long, long time, maybe even into retirement, again, because we have rental properties, because we do have some cash flow. It has an ability to offset expenses for us, which means that in the future, we're going to be hopefully drawing less on some of those funds that we have invested in the market.
Yeah, and again, so much of that has to do with like your desire to even hold 100% stocks into retirement. Like for most people, that's not a good idea, but if you live frugally, daily, and you have a paid off mortgage, and you have real estate that's producing a monthly income, and you desire to leave an inheritance to your kids, I mean, that can be a reason why somebody in their 60s, 70s, 80s might want to continue to have massive amounts of stock exposure, whereas, you know, most people in that phase of life really shouldn't, you know?
That's right. Yeah. I remember J.L. Collins saying specifically, like, what he called that was something along the lines of investing for future generations.
Yeah.
And literally, it's just like, well, why would you ever downgrade your investments from something like the total stock market index funds or the S&P 500 funds that are out there? Because don't you always want it just to continue to grow at the clip that it currently is? And the idea is that you don't necessarily need that money. You don't need the bulk of that, at least, in order to survive. You're going to leave the vast majority of that money, you know, invested in the market. And granted, this is kind of like a far off, you know, like an overall plan. That's not where we are right now, but it's definitely something that we're kind of looking forward to. And it feels like it's a strategy that resonates with us now.
Yeah. So, okay, now we've revealed how we invest our money. I don't think there was anything massively of massive interest there. Like, we're not going to see any headlines tomorrow about how Matt invests his money. But it's just not going to, it's not headline making, like, oh, sort of news.
Matt owns 1/100th of a Bitcoin.
Yeah. It's just, it's one of those things that isn't exciting. It's not sexy. It's not fascinating, right? It's not this peek under the hood of something that is like of a vintage car that's in mint condition. Like, it's really just this, it's basic 1996 Honda Accord style investing. But I hope that helps, at least that people know this is exactly how we invest our money in the same way that we recommend other people do it. And it comes from a place of having thought about it for a long period of time too. Yeah. Not just from kind of like pushing the easy button for the sake of not having to do any thinking or any research. Truly, it's the best way for our families to invest. And it's really just the easiest and cheapest way to diversify, you know, your retirement funds.
That's right. And diversification, right? It's a really important part of investing well. Investing narrowly might work in the short term, you know, but it'll likely have maybe more negative consequences over the long run, or it'll at least take more work, right? If you want to invest in a more sort of niche sector, that's how you like to say it. You like to say niche. or even go in on single stocks, it's going to take a lot of research. It's going to take a lot of time. A lot of us don't have that kind of time.
A lot of mental bandwidth.
Yeah,
just that.
When it comes to investing. And if you're not putting in that time, well, that's kind of like worse news, because that means you're just jumping on the bandwagon, right? Like
you're guessing.
You're following everybody else, and that's speculative investing. And so if that's what you're doing, you need to be prepared to be able to lose all of that money, because who knows where that actual stock or that quote unquote investment will end up. And, you know, diversification can look different too, depending on your age and your risk profile, your risk tolerance. But if you want to hit the easy button when it comes to diversification, just put all your money in a target date retirement fund and then just keep putting your money there for years to come. It's the perfect way to not even have to think about your asset allocation pretty much ever. Everything's on autopilot. It rebalances. And then you can spend your additional time, your additional mental bandwidth on the things that you actually do care about. You know, like I guess I don't want people to feel bad if they feel like that, well, that's all I want to do. I just want to do the target date retirement fund. Well, that's great. However, if you're more interested in it, well, then you can kind of like move on to the, you know, like the more slightly more advanced ways of thinking about, you know, investing specifically in your retirement. However, if you don't care about doing that, a target date fund is great.
Yeah, I think sometimes simple gets a bad rap, right? People are like, that's just simple, which they think equates to stupid.
Right.
And that's just not the case. Simple is often the best move in a lot of areas of life, more simplicity. And I think when it comes to investing, simplicity is vastly underrated.
Oh yeah.
And the simpler that we make it, the more likely we're going to stick to it, the more likely we're actually going to build wealth over the years, as opposed to trying to toy with things and find this nirvana sort of investing strategy, which in all likelihood is going to lose you more money than it's going to make you. So go basic, go simple, and get going is what we would say.
Nice. All right. I like it.
Well, let's get back to the beer we had on the show, Matt. This one is called Haptic. It's from Halfway Crooks, one of our favorite breweries right up the street. What were your thoughts on this IPA, dude?
Yeah, it's called Haptic, like a haptic touch on your iPhone. Do you have that on your Pixel 4?
I do. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like
even on Androids, they have that, man.
Even on the Droid phone, it vibrates when I touch it. No, this is a fantastic beer. Man, Halfway Crooks, if you ever have a chance to swing by there anytime you're coming through Atlanta, look them up. I feel like they are quickly becoming one of our favorite in-town breweries here in Atlanta. They make such amazing stuff. And also, too, just their, like, their labels, the way they design things, their style, their overall brand, basically, is just so on point. Like, you're literally wearing a Halfway Crooks t-shirt right now. Like, you're such a huge fan.
I'm a nerd.
Of how they do things. But it's very much a, like, 8-bit, old-school, you know, MS-DOS kind of branding, which sounds super nerdy, but they do it in such a classy way. They definitely are, like, the best. They've got the best merch in Atlanta by far. Would you agree?
I feel like they're, like, a brewery and a fashion line, almost. That's how I think of them.
It's not just beer, it's a lifestyle.
Yeah, I love going there. I love having beers there, and then I love, you know, just drinking their beers at home too. Like, really, they specialize in, like, pilsners and lagers. This one is an IPA. It was delicious because, like, everything
they've ramped up
making,
the IPAs. Yeah. That's the thing, and they're really freaking good.
They're really good. So yeah, the head brewer there is from Belgium, and so yeah, his take on Belgian beers is incredible. Like,
here's what's up.
They're really good. So if you're into Belgian beers, come check it out. If you like IPAs, they're doing a good job there too. So yeah, definitely one of our favorite spots. And I'm glad we got to share this beer today on the show, buddy.
Yeah, and that being said, this isn't a Pilsner or, you know, one of those more Euro-style beers. This is an American IPA, and it is so stinking good. I mean, it's super hop forward, and it's hop forward in the sense that it's like dry hopped, right? And so it's kind of got like that tingly freshness going on, and it's so well balanced. It's not overly sweet. It almost has a dryness going on. It's like this combination of the dryness plus the awesome flavors from these hops makes this one of my, gosh, like one of the favorite beers I've had in a long time so far this year, dude. This is a really delicious beer. We're huge fans of Halfway Crooks, and we want more folks to check them out.
Yeah, it's not going over the top in the juicy direction. It's really exactly. Just like staying true to the hops, I think, that went into this beer.
Yeah.
But they shine through in a big way. And so, yeah, I dug this one too. All right, but that's going to be it for this episode. For folks that want the show notes for this episode, including links to some of the funds that we mentioned, you can find those up on our website at howtomoney.com.
That's right. And if you have been listening to the show and want to help us out, help to get the word out to others who have not yet found the show, leave us a review over at Apple Podcasts or wherever it is that you get your podcasts. And thanks in advance. So, Joel, that's going to be it for this episode, buddy. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out. Welcome to How to Money. I'm Matt.
And I'm Joel.
That's not how we do it. Let's do it right.